scores! Gilmore scores! With 1:03 left!
Off the glass, to left corner to Aguila. Aguila to the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Aguila. Rebound, another shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson.
All right, another week begins, and happy Monday. Another hour of Flames Talk is underway on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hello, it's Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson of Post Media this week with you here on Flames Talk. Of course, live right here on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Text lines open at 960-960 as we kick off this hour from our Groundworks downtown studio. And yes, a new week begins, Wes, and the Flames are still in the fight. How we doing?
We're good, buddy. How are you?
I am good. I am well. And the Flames kick off, I guess, what you would call it, depending on if you believe the week begins on Monday or Sunday, the Flames begin a 4 or a 3-game week. 6 games to go. And
this is already complicated.
And controversial, I think. Because I think the week starts on Monday, so I'm calling this a four-game
week. I'm a Monday guy as well.
Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Sunday is what the Flames have in front of them. And this playoff fight continues, and the climb remains an uphill one for the Flames. They start off a 2-game road trip Monday night in San Jose, then into Anaheim on Wednesday night. And since we last spoke on a non-postgame edition of Flames Talk, Flames have dropped a 3-2 overtime decision against Vegas. That came on Saturday night. Then Sunday afternoon, Minnesota 3-2 overtime win over Dallas. So that puts the Flames 7 points back of a playoff spot with 6 games remaining this season. And I say that because they officially cannot catch Minnesota on the tiebreak. Minnesota has officially won the tiebreak because the best Calgary could do is tie Minnesota on regulation wins, and they cannot catch Minnesota on the second tiebreaker, which is regulation overtime wins. So the Flames officially have to make up 7 points in the next 6 games, which is not impossible, but it's not unfair to say it's an uphill climb.
And it's not ideal.
It is not the ideal situation. And kind of, Wes, it feels like it's felt for a little bit here. An uphill climb, but a Flames team that isn't throwing in any towel. I'm expecting them to be a tough out the rest of the way, at least a tough out the rest of the way while they're still fighting and still in it. And until the point they have no mathematical life left, and the Flames are hoping that is never. I think we're talking about a team that's going to lay it all out there, and a team that's going to put it all on the line, and we'll see if that's exactly what they can do starting Monday in San Jose.
And I said to you by text the other night, like, it would really be cool if Friday at the Saddle Dome, when the Minnesota Wild come calling, is a game of the significance that it potentially could be, wouldn't it? And to make that happen, the Flames are going to need to sweep their way through California, and then they're going to need a little bit of help. But if you go into Friday at the Dome, having won a couple in a row with an opportunity, I mean, that would basically be an elimination game for the Flames. If
San Jose wins Wednesday, so their next game is Wednesday at home to the Sharks. So if Minnesota wins Wednesday against San Jose, then the Flames could be officially eliminated on Friday with a Minnesota regulation win.
Yes. So, yep. And even if it's not official, that's an elimination game for the Flames.
Yeah. And I mean, by all intents and purposes, yes, I agree. It is.
And I think it would be awesome for the city and for the fan base if that game means something. Will it? We don't know yet. But I agree with the way you teed this up. Like, I've given the Flames credit for this already. I think they've done a really good job of sort of tuning out everything else. You know, I think it could have been pretty discouraging that the St. Louis Blues went on a massive win streak that is certainly putting the Flames season on the ropes. I think there were, it just feels like not a whole lot has gone right for this Flames team, and yet I would praise their sort of resilience and their stick with it.
100%. I even, you know, I was watching that game Saturday, as were you at the Dome, and
yeah.
They fall down 2-0 and were, what, 8 seconds away from being down 2 going into the third period. Joel Hanley with that great shot and a great shift by Uyghur and Kadri, and a really hardworking shift that allows them to get back within 1. But, I mean, I thought at 2-0 and at 2-1 after 40, it was pretty clear how outmatched the Flames were, and yet 43 seconds into the third period, it's a 2-2 game. And with the way Dustin Wolf had played, and with the way that, again, you can't, it feels like it is such a difficult proposition to pull away on this group. In a game, it is like an elite team like the Vegas Golden yeah. Knights were the better group through 40 minutes of play and could only muster a 2-1 edge. And that is a credit to how committed the Flames are to playing their game, how strong their goaltending is on a night-in, night-out basis, and the style they play when it's committed to makes it hard to, with good goaltending, makes it hard to really run up the score on them. And that was another example mm-hmm. on Saturday night, because I thought that the Flames fought their tails off, and I was very impressed, despite the fact I was not enamored with their game through 40. They had a 2-2 tie, and they pulled out a point in that game and played a really good third period again.
Yeah.
No, you don't want to always be playing from behind, and the Flames are saying that a lot right now, and you don't want to put yourself in a spot where you have to fight back, because it's not always going to work. It's not always going to go that way, but you cannot ever question this team's, what's your term, stick-to-itiveness?
Yeah.
Stick-with-itiveness. Which I think is in the dictionary.
Yeah.
Oxford naturally. And Webster's.
Yeah, Gilbertson, Oxford, and Webster. Those are the three.
The Gilbertson one's the only one I care about. yeah.
It's fairly thin is the problem. But it's easier to carry around
your
with you.
Your vocabulary is better than mine.
I don't know about that.
You're the wordsmith. I'm just the idiot talking head. But yeah, I really do think you have to, again, tip your hat to them in terms sure. of how they don't wave white flags in game, and which is why they're not waving the white flag in the season. They understand. You know, Blake Coleman said it on Monday morning in San Jose, like, until there's a zero beside our name or an E beside our name, we're fighting. And they know it's an uphill climb. They know that they don't have their own fate in their hands right now, but they are in a situation where they're going to try to fight their tails off to the end and see if they can sneak their way in and get a little help too.
Wasn't it almost cruel, buddy, the way that game ended on Saturday? And if there were two, if I can just lay this out for you, if there were two guys from my vantage point who deserved a much better fate on Saturday night,
the two guys who were in on the game,
right?
Winner,
yeah. Like, Mackenzie Uyghur can barely skate in overtime after blocking that shot by Jack Eichel. I think at any other point in the game, you would have given him a couple shifts to just go out there at a stoppage and make sure he could do it. And yet he's given you a gargantuan effort, the second highest ice time of any Flames player this season, has the great back check that makes the Hanley goal possible in the first place. To have it go off his foot and then bounce off Dustin Wolf's shoulder / back or whatever it was on a game where Dustin Wolf deserved so much better was just, it was cruel. That's the word that I think of. It was a cruel way to end that game for two guys who had absolutely played their asses off.
Yeah. And I mean, it happens and
sure.
It's part of the game, and right now the Flames have not gotten a lot of puck luck, if you will. It's been a stretch where, you know, things have gone against them again. An almost goal. Blake yeah. Coleman is cursed.
Yeah.
Because not only did a goal not count on Saturday, and it shouldn't have. That was definitively not a goal, but it was
that
by
one
an
was
eyelash.
Even easier than the
agreed
the previous
yeah,
one.
Agreed. Yeah. But then he also had one in Utah, which was deemed not to be a goal.
Yeah.
And then he had the goal against Dallas called back when Joel Farabee was called for goalie interference, which I do believe was the right call, as frustrating as it was. You add in the Zeri no goal. There's been some video reviews that have gone against the Flames, which just adds to the frustration. And then a goal like that ends it on Saturday night.
And we heard them say post-game, whether it was Mackenzie Weegar on After Hours or the guys who spoke with the media in the locker room. Like, we heard them sort of express that feeling that they can't catch a break right now. And I did think... I'm not sure what sort of vibes emanated out of the locker room for you on Saturday. I thought it was actually a fairly hopeful message coming out of the locker room, despite the fact that it had been such a heartbreaker. But you heard a lot of that. Like, we're not getting a lot of luck. We haven't caught a lot of breaks, and that's not just the disallowed or the almost goals. It's some of the heartbreaking finishes on the out-of-town scoreboard where a result is just about to go your way. And as we saw again yesterday, sort of pivots on you. I thought the one, like, before this sounds like Wes groaning about how the Flames haven't gotten any luck, I thought the one break they needed to capitalize on in that Vegas game was Mark Stone being called for something that certainly from my vantage point wasn't a penalty.
Mm-hmm.
I thought if you could have cashed in on that power play, we're maybe having a very different conversation today. But I continue to just give them credit for hanging around. I don't know where it goes from here. I don't know with the way that the deck is stacked against them and with the opponents that the Minnesota Wild have, how realistic it is that we're talking in a week and a half about a playoff spot, and yet they're doing the only thing they can, which is just try to make it happen.
You win as many of your final six as you can, and you put as much pressure on Minnesota as you can to maybe have a seed of doubt enter their mind. The Wild don't play again till Wednesday. Then they're in Calgary for Friday's game, the head-to-head showdown. Playoff odds over at Money Puck. They've got St. Louis at 98.6%. Just the 12 in a row for the Blues.
Just an incredible run. The longest win streak in the NHL so far this season.
And a franchise record. And they'll go for 13 Monday night against Winnipeg. So it's St. Louis 98.6%, Minnesota 91.9%, Calgary 9.4%. That's at Hockey... that's at Money Puck. And at Hockey Reference, it's... slightly higher for the other two teams and lower for Calgary. They've got St. Louis 99.1%, Minnesota 92.3%, Calgary 8.8% to make the playoffs. So those are your playoff odds, which honestly, with the uphill climb they've got in front of them, sounds pretty like right in the ballpark to me. If I were to say, you know, 1-10 or 2-10,
sure,
that kind of feels like where the Flames are right now, because even if they go 6-6, it might not get them in.
And Money Puck is my sort of go-to for that stat. And the Flames have been hanging around 10% for a little while, right? Like, we've seen them in that sort of neighborhood more often than not for the last week or so. I think it's accurate. I mean, I'm not here to argue with the math, but like you said, if you start to break it down, 1-10, yeah, that sounds about right.
I know the kind of mindset coming out of that game Friday where Minnesota dropped the game against the Islanders on the road. You know, the quotes you were hearing out of the Minnesota room were quite strong. From Brock Faber, from Matt Zuccarello, you're like, okay, they realize the situation they're in.
Yeah.
And they had a Dallas team on the second half of a back-to-back on Sunday afternoon. They were down 1-0 after 20, and they ran their show in the third period. They kind of did what sometimes happens, right? A good team on the second half of a back-to-back. Dallas is going to the playoffs. They're already clinched. And the Stars, with some heavy legs, you know, found themselves defending. Minnesota took a hard-earned 2-1 lead, and then Thomas Harley banked one off of Zach Bogosian to make it 2-2, and then Minnesota Minnesota would eventually win it on a power play goal in overtime. That was a gutsy win for Minnesota because for the first time after Friday's loss and Calgary's win over over Anaheim and then a point against Vegas, I think for the first time, Minnesota truly was feeling a little bit of heat, and, yeah. and they came out and they responded. And now their job is to keep on responding because, you know, they drop a game against San Jose on Wednesday. Well, then all of a sudden it's a whole lot more dire. And so it's, I'm really curious to see, like, the Flames are in San Jose Monday night, win this game, make it so now you're 5 points back of the playoffs with a game in hand, with a head-to-head coming, all that type of stuff. And if you're the Flames, that's all you can do is, yeah. is try to make life difficult on a Wild team that I think is aware of the situation, but they still don't have Kaprizov. They still don't have Eriksson Ek, although it sounds like those guys are knocking on the door. Try to make that game on Friday night as meaningful as possible.
Yeah, and you know, and you're going to face teams these next couple games, especially in the same boat, right? You know that the pregame pep talk in the Sharks locker room or in the Ducks locker room is go out and put a bit of a nail in the coffin of this team's playoff hopes. And, you know, Ryan Warsawski, the head coach of San Jose, is going to be giving that same yeah. speech to his team before Wednesday against the Wild. Like, these games, while they're must wins because of the type of opponent, it's not crazy to think that one of these teams could deal the Wild a loss. It's also just not crazy to think that one of these teams could deal the Flames a loss,
yep.
especially with yep. the margins that they play with, especially with the, you know, the reality of a Flames team that scores the amount they do is that a five minute bad patch in a yeah. hockey game yeah. can ultimately really cost them.
This before we hit the text line, this feels in a lot of ways like 2 years ago, but a little bit different. Like, remember 2 years ago in Daryl Sutter's final year, the Flames were trying to chase down Winnipeg, who was throwing it in full reverse down the stretch, much like Minnesota. Great first half of the season, but in the second half, they were slowly starting to decline and slowly dip from Minnesota being very comfortably in a Central Division playoff spot for the first half of the season. Colorado easily overtook them yeah. as they got hot and as they figured out their roster issues, and Minnesota still not winning more than they're losing.
You mean just traded their whole roster?
Pretty much, yeah. You know, ranting in your goalie. Who needs it?
We'll bring it. You know what? Just, like, keep Makar and MacKinnon, but let's flip the other 18.
Who needs anybody but these two guys? And Winnipeg did eventually get in, even though, and it, very similar again, Calgary had a head-to-head with Winnipeg in the final few games of the season and won on the road in Winnipeg, won that game, and I think that moved him within a point of a playoff spot at the time, which is exactly potentially what could happen Friday, depending on how things go this week. And the Flames didn't make it that year. They got eliminated in game 81 against the Nashville Predators on Nick Ritchie's shootout selection.
I remember it vividly.
The difference here, though, is that as much as we were hearing the right things from the Flames that at that stage, everything was negative then. Everything was infighting with Daryl Sutter. Does Kadri want to play for Sutter? Does Huberto want to play for Sutter? You know what? Everything was like, is Sutter going to be here at the end of the year? That was the narrative. And remember, it was the year after they had gone to round two against Edmonton. It was the first season without Johnny. It was the first season without Matthew. Like, it was a very, very different feel. And so that year, yes, they fought until game 81 and ended up missing by a point or two when it was all said and done and Winnipeg got in. This one feels like, even if they don't get in, even if it goes the same way, I don't know, the reasons why they are where they are so much different and so much more positive. Instead of Jacob Markstrom having a horrible follow-up season, Dustin Wolf is having a Calder Trophy eligible season. Like, he's having a great year and is one of the main reasons. And instead of nonstop criticism on Huberto and Kadri, they're the driving forces offensively on this team, and the Flames aren't still here without them. And, right. and instead of Daryl Sutter being, you know, completely against using young players in the lineup, it was, remember, Jacob Pelche didn't play in those final 10 games or what it was. We're like, they could use Pelche. What are we doing here? Well, now it's Matt Coronato and guys who are a little bit younger getting key spots in this lineup. I don't know. It just feels, and then the mood feels way more positive. Playing for one another is what you're hearing. And we want to get there because we like being around one another. It just, it feels like a different group 2 years later, even though the situation is very, very similar.
Well, and the biggest thing is the expectations, right? Like that Flames team was supposed to accomplish something. That Flames team had gone out and signed Nazem Kadri, who was going to maybe be that piece, right? We've talked at length about the first round pick that they traded away and are about to surrender to make that deal happen. And so that team went in with should contend expectations. Yes. And this team was trying to tell anybody who would listen that they could contend. And not many people were believing it. And that's the big difference, isn't it? And I shouldn't say the big difference, because all the things that you spelled out, you're bang on about it. It's just the way that this season has been viewed, the way that either a playoff make or a playoff miss would be digested, the way this season will be remembered in this market, all hinges as much as anything from my vantage point on expectations.
Yeah, which is very fair. Okay. Text line at 960-960. Let's get to it. Ned says, let's not forget the last time the Flames played the Wild. Friday's game could be a barn burner. Whatever happens, all these games are valuable lessons for the future of this team, for what it's going to take to make the postseason in the future. Yes, the last time the Flames played Minnesota, they won 5-4 there. And the time before that, I believe they were up 3-1 in the final 8 minutes. Minnesota scored twice and eventually Calgary won in a shootout. So both games have been wild.
We've come a long ways since the days that Nicholas Backstrom and Mika Kiprusoff made Flames Wild basically unwatchable.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like if there was a second goal scored in one of those games.
Marion Gabrick and that was it.
Like it was always a Tuesday and it was always awful.
Yep. Always.
Always.
Dan and Chestermere, once again, start off with six straight, end off with six straight. What else we got here? This says, with two games in hand and a Wild victory on Friday, are the Flames still not very much in it? I'm on board for the rebuild. I mean, they are. Like, they're not out of it, but the Minnesota, as of right now, on April 7th, Minnesota fully controls their own destiny. All Minnesota needs to do is win three of their last four, even if they lose the Calgary game, and they're in. That's the situation. A 3-1 record for Minnesota guarantees they get in regardless. Calgary could go 6-0, and Minnesota's still in if they go 3-1, which is why it's a tough situation. But all you can do is try and put as much pressure on them as possible down the stretch.
Yeah, and we, you know, for those just catching up or just tuning in, I don't have the exact numbers, but you said, you know, MoneyPuck, which is a site we both use to track playoff odds, has them at 9-point-something% now. Like, this is
9.4, yep.
Yeah, this is not Wes and Pat saying, you know, here we go, the Flames are cruising into a playoff spot. But for all that those guys in that locker room can do is try to win out and hope for a little bit of help. They could win out and miss, but
that's got to be the goal now.
Yeah, it has to be.
You got to win out if you're the Flames, and it starts with Monday night.
Yeah, I mean, even five, it seems like we're at the point that even 5-1-0 probably doesn't do it.
Yeah. This reads, I don't think the puck could have been any closer to going in without going in. The only one closer was last week in
Tuesday.
Utah.
Yeah.
This says from Wedley, run the table this week. They got this. Don't dream it's over. That's from Wedley in Bridalwood. And finally, this says they need to play Zane. This isn't just some mid-round pick or AHL call-up we're talking about. This is your top 10 blue-chip prospect who just put up historic numbers in junior. Zane Parekh isn't just a part of the future. He's one of the best six defensemen on the Flames roster right now. There's no excuse not to find a spot for him in the lineup. You don't ease in a player like this. You let him play, let him learn, and let him help. He's already taken over Bean, Miramanov, and Pahal on the depth chart for me.
Can you, like, is there a way in your handy-dandy system to flag that text? Like, could we read that again?
I actually have.
Yeah.
Read it to kick off our segment, to kick off
our because that's something we want to dive in on, certainly, like you said, Pat, at the start of the second hour, we're going to go deep on, you know, what might be the plan, what could be the plan for Zane Parekh. So however you do it, bookmark it, whatever. It's a good text.
Daryl says, let's continue to start Wolf because he's so godlike and amazing. Daryl is, for whatever reason, very anti-Dustin Wolf. Dustin Wolf was like the number one reason why the Flames were able to scratch out a single point on Saturday. He was very good then. Thought he was very good against Anaheim on Thursday as well.
I thought that performance Saturday against the Golden Knights was probably top three or four for Dustin Wolf of the entire
season. That shorthanded stop he made in the third period at 2-2 was spectacular.
Even the...
It made it look so easy when it was a 10 out of 10 on the degree of difficulty.
Even the five saves, four on one power play that he made on...
All on Olofsson.
On Olofsson. Yeah. Like, I just... Okay, set him up. Okay, Dustin Wolf is there. Okay, set him up. He's there.
Another
and then there was another great stop in the third on Olofsson again.
Yep. Finally, Tom and Airdrie. This year is a success regardless if they make it. They've met expectations and I would say exceeded them. It's like building a house. They have the foundation set now, and next year they get to start choosing their finishes and fine-tuning the details.
Yeah, I don't know that I agree with the second part of that text. I certainly agree that this group has met and exceeded expectations, but until there is a future number one center, the foundation is not complete.
Yeah, I agree with that 100%. He's Wes Gilbertson on Twitter at Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg. This hour of Flames Talk's underway. Hey, can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at Rogers.com.
This is Flames Talk. Join the conversation at 960-960. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It's a Monday edition of Flames Talk with Wes Gilbertson of Post Media. My name is Pat Steinberg, and now the Daily Flames Roundtable brought to you by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The fastest growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric. Informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why. Minutes from the Calgary Airport. Now joined by Derek Wills to complete our Daily Flames Roundtable on this Monday. And gentlemen, Monday night, Flames in San Jose, 76 down, 6 to go this regular season. And hey, look, I mean, the Flames, to make the playoffs, may very well have to go 6-0 to make it. So they all feel like must wins. But boy, Monday in San Jose against this Sharks team, it really feels like a must win, doesn't it, hey?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the way I see it, guys, the next three games are absolutely must win. You cannot lose to a Sharks team that for the second straight season is dead last in the National Hockey League's overall standings. You cannot lose to an up-and-coming Ducks team that is so far out of the playoff picture they couldn't see it with a telescope. Yes, they're a dangerous team, but one that you have to beat. And you definitely cannot lose to the Wild team that you're chasing on Friday night. And let's hope that that game at Scotiabank Saddledome is meaningful, because if it is, it'll be the biggest game the Flames will have played since 2022. So the way I see it, you've got to sweep this California road trip. You might need to get some help on the out-of-town scoreboard, although that might be far-fetched to hope for. You haven't had a lot of it, and it's the same Sharks team the Flames will play tonight that the Wild will host on Wednesday night. But, you know, if everything goes the Flames' way, let's say they win these two games against the Sharks and the Ducks, and somehow the Sharks then upset the Wild. I mean, that sets the stage for what would be just a huge hockey game inside of the Sea of Red on Friday night. So that's what I'm hoping for.
Yeah, I that's what I'm hoping for, too, only because I'd love to be sitting in the press box in what I think would be one of the cooler atmospheres we've seen in the Saddle Dome in recent memory. It felt like that building was cranked on Saturday. I mean, anytime you get to be there to cover one of those high-stakes games is awesome. And to make that happen, and I'll just agree with what you said, Wilsey, and I know what Pat will say because we just finished talking about it as well. Like, if you don't sweep your way through California, I think you can forget about it. And
yeah,
we're talking about two teams that have not had much success of late. Obviously, the Sharks are really struggling. Obviously, the Anaheim Ducks, you know, paid a visit to the Saddle Dome and played a pretty loosey-goosey brand of hockey last week. And so, you know, they're two winnable games. And yet, Wilsey, I'll just throw this back to you for a moment. I think there's some probably pressure that comes with that as well. Isn't there, knowing that, geez, these are ones you can't let slip away?
Yeah, I think so. And Wes, don't forget that in the first two games of the season series, the Flames didn't exactly stomp the Sharks. I mean, they beat them 3-1 in San Jose on December 28th. And then Joel Hanley had to break a 2-2 tie with 6:32 left in the third period for a 3-2 win in Calgary on February 23rd. So it's not like it's been a lopsided season series. And I do think these games can be tricky because you go from a game against a Golden Knights team that is very structured and has a lot to play for. They're still fighting for top spot in the Pacific Division, to two games against teams that are not very structured. They play a loose brand of hockey, but that can also be dangerous. And two teams that don't really have anything to lose.
Right.
So I do think that this could be a tricky trip for the Flames, but you've got to win these two games in San Jose and Anaheim. And here's something we probably haven't talked enough about, Wes. Did you know, you probably did, but some of our listeners probably don't know this, the Flames have a 12-game point streak against Pacific Division opponents.
I
pretty impressive,
not know,
right?
That. Yeah, I heard a stat, and I don't have it in front of me. I should try and call it up. I also heard a stat about the number of victories that Dustin Wolf has against California-based teams already. And for a guy who's been in the league for a season and a half, bear with me here while I try and find it. It totally blew me away. 11 of his 33 wins have come against the three California-based teams.
That's crazy.
Isn't that wild? I personally just didn't see that coming. I know Dustin Wolf starts again tonight in San Jose, not far from his hometown of Gilroy, California. And I suppose with a record like that, you might as well keep running him in those games.
Sorry. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, 33 miles from his hometown, and he's 5-1-0 with a 2.15 and a 9-10 in six career games against the team he grew up cheering for, the Sharks. So Dustin Wolf does get the nod tonight. And here's something else we probably haven't talked enough about. So the Flames, remember how much they struggled outside of Scotiabank Saddle Dome to start the season? They were 3-7-4 in their first 14 away games, and that 357 point percentage was sixth worst in the NHL. But in 24 road games since December 9th, the Flames are 13-8-3, and their 6.04 point percentage is actually fourth best in the league since then. Only the Maple Leaf Stars and Blues have been better. So Flames have played some really good hockey outside of the Saddle Dome in the back half of the season.
And Jen, sorry, I had to step out there for a sec. Here's the situation. The Flames will need help on the out-of-town scoreboard at least once, even if they win the head-to-head game against Minnesota, because all Minnesota needs is three wins in any fashion, and they're in. Even if the Flames go 6-for-6 down the stretch, Minnesota wins three, and the Flames don't make it because Minnesota's got the tiebreaker. So, yes, every game is important, but, like, you've got to do what you can to impact Minnesota's mindset, and that's why I look at this and I say to myself, okay, you've got to win these two games leading in, regardless of what the Wild do on Wednesday against the Sharks. If they win or lose, you need to put yourself in a spot where you have put as much pressure as humanly possible on the Wild going into Friday night. So they're all must-win games, but you cannot lose games to a team you're 35 points ahead of and also significantly ahead of in the Anaheim Ducks. So they're all must-wins. I really do believe that. And until they get some help on the out-of-town scoreboard, they're going to be all must-wins for the Flames. But, like, you've got two games before you play the Wild. If you want that game to mean anything, you've got to win these next two, and you certainly can't start off the week with a loss to the Sharks. Even in any way, shape, or form, you got to beat them. It is just win baby territory now for the Flames. So if you got to get 10 rounds of a shootout, you go to 10 rounds of a shootout because the tiebreaker doesn't matter anymore. They will not catch Minnesota. They have to finish ahead of them, and that's the situation that exists right now.
You know, it's funny, I chatted with Nazem Kadri this morning, and we'll hear that conversation before Monday's game against the Sharks, and just asked him, with all the calls that have gone the other way, and it feels like there's been a lot of them this season, but especially in the last couple of weeks, whether it be, you know, puck sitting not quite far enough across the goal line or coaches' challenges. I mean, it doesn't feel like the Flames have had a lot of puck luck. Doesn't feel like they've had a lot of help from the hockey gods over the last couple of weeks. And, you know, I asked him if that was something that he's thought about, and he said yes. And he said, you know, we just have to keep playing the right way and winning games, and sooner or later our luck will turn, or something along those lines anyway. So who knows? I can tell you guys that the vibe, I'm not sure I would say the vibe was immaculate when the team took off from Calgary yesterday, but it was good. I was kind of wondering how the guys would be feeling after a tough-to-swallow 3-2 overtime loss to the Golden Knights on Saturday night. But, you know, I was not surprised, but I was impressed that they just kind of turned the page and were ready for an important two-game road trip. But I can tell you that, at least for me, there was a much different vibe when the team landed in San Jose and they saw the out-of-town scoreboard, because the toughest remaining game on the Wild schedule was yesterday's game against the Stars. Yep. They trailed 1-0 in the third period of that game. And, you know, to their credit, they battled back and they found a way to win it. So, you know, the Flames know they have to take care of their own business, and that's all that they can control. But they also need some help on the out-of-town scoreboard. So I'm not going to lie, I didn't expect the Wild without two of their top players to beat the Stars, who might be the top team in the league yesterday. Just like I don't expect the Sharks to beat the Wild on Wednesday. But you never know. The Flames just have to take care of their own business and hope you get some help finally.
It's the Daily Flames Roundtable. Derek Wills, Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg on this Monday edition of Flames Talk. Gents, new old line combinations. We saw them revert in the third period of the game against Vegas on Saturday night. And one of those changes was putting Huberdeau and Kadri back together on a line with Martin Pospisil. It had Coronado back on the backline line with Coleman, Frost, Farabee, Sharon Govich. The only line that didn't change, and for good reason, is that line of Lomberg, Rooney, and Klapka, which has been really strong for him of late. But specifically, reuniting to start this game Monday night in San Jose, reuniting Huberdeau and Kadri. Is this the right look, and is this the right time to do it in your eyes?
Sure, why not? I mean, I don't feel strongly about it one way or the other. I suspect one of the reasons why they're probably doing it is because when they split those two guys up, they talked about being a tougher matchup for opponents, because now you can't sick your top checking line and your top defense pairing on both Jonathan Huberdeau and Nazem Kadri, who have been the team's two best offensive players this season. You split them up and you make it to maybe a bit more difficult in a matchup game for your opponent. But listen, the Flames on paper are so much better than the Sharks that shouldn't matter. So hopefully reuniting your best passer in Huberdeau and the guy who scored more goals than anybody on your team in Kadri will help the Flames win this hockey game against the Sharks tonight. And then you've got a pretty impactful player playing on the other side of that line. And I know that the points haven't been there. He's pointless in five. He's goalless in 19. But I think Martin Pospisil is playing some of the best hockey of his life. And he's been physical all season. But how about his game against the Golden Knights on Saturday? I was doing some digging today. So he had 11 hits in that game. Did you guys know that's a franchise record for most hits in a game?
I had no idea he finished with 11. I was still focused on the 9 he had in Colorado.
Yeah, just bonkers. So he's up to third in the NHL in hits this season with 287. The Canucks' Kiefer Sherwood has actually broken the league record. He's got 441, and the Blue Jackets' Matthew Olivier is second with 290, so just three ahead of Pospisil. But with the way he's playing, a north-south game, using his size, using his speed, banging and crashing, I think it could be a big night for the combination of Jonathan Huberdeau and Nazem Kadri, and I hope for Martin Pospisil's sake, because he's playing so well that he finally gets rewarded offensively a little bit against the Sharks tonight.
And while we're talking hit records, Martin Pospisil, not just the game against Vegas, but overall, 287 on the season, which is a Flames franchise record as well. And I know people are going to say, well, what about so-and-so? They didn't start tracking it till 05-06, and so it's a newer stat, and yet I think really shows, especially since almost 100 of those hits have come since the Four Nations, really shows the way Pospisil's impacted it of late. I actually wrote about him earlier today for Post Media. Let me get back to the Huberdeau Kadri question and sort of half answer it, because I want to talk about a different line anyways. And that's that I think reuniting the Coronado Backlund Coleman line is also something that will have a massive impact. I like the move to go back to that Huberdeau Kadri pair. I don't think either of them have been, and I realize they've continued to produce, but I don't think either of them have maybe been as dangerous without each other. I certainly, you know, don't think Jonathan Huberdeau has been as effective without Nazem Kadri. And so I don't dislike the best eggs in one basket approach to this one, but I also like the opportunity or the reunion of Matt Coronado with Backlund and Coleman. I think Coronado has maybe strayed away a little bit from what had made him most impactful, and I think that's a good spot for him to kind of get back in his groove.
Yeah, I mainly because of who they're playing tonight and what is left in the season, and now, you know, it feels like maybe the most, at least in my estimation, it feels like the most uphill it's been, because they're back to where they were 7 points out of a playoff spot, but now there's less runway. And so it feels like it's the most uphill they've been. And so I you've got a game that, yes, you need to win, but it's also a winnable one against San Jose tonight. And it feels like this is a good time to do it, because you, for the vast majority of what has been a generally successful season for this group, you've had Huberdeau and Kadri together on a line. That was one of the things that really started to turn the team back in the right direction after maybe they had fallen off the rails a little bit there in November, right? And so that was one of the things that really helped get things back on track. And then they were together for like 30 games, 40 games, whatever it was, until the new line combinations were put together. So I think it's the right time to do it. I think it's a great message, like, hey, we're still fighting, we're still trying to get in, and we're going to go with the group that got us here. And 6 games to go, 10 days remaining in the regular season. You might as well go back to the group that has worked best for you all season. So I like the timing, I like the idea, and let's see if, to your point, if it can help Pospisil get rewarded offensively, which I'm with you, Wilsey, he absolutely deserves it the way he's played since the Four Nations break, and see if it gets Huberdeau and Kadri back to being even more the offensive leaders on this team, which obviously they've been all season.
Yeah, and as you guys know, I love how Jonathan Huberdeau has played this season, but I will say it that in the last four or five games, he hasn't been as good, at least not in my opinion. He's pointless in five, he's goalless in seven, and I think he's been a little bit too indirect in his approach. Passes going the wrong way, and we saw that a couple of times against the Golden Knights on Saturday night. You know, he's been really good at getting to his opponent's net and scoring goals from in tight. So, you know, maybe reuniting him with Nazem Kadri will help him get his game back. And the Flames power play has also struggled a little bit of late. So who knows, maybe those two guys being back together at 5-on-5 will help at 5-on-4 as well.
All right, Wilsey, that will wrap us up on our roundtable on this Monday. We'll do it all over again on Tuesday. Thank you, sir, as always.
Okay, guys, enjoy the game.
He is Derek Wills. He's Wes Gilbertson. My name is Pat Steinberg, and that'll start to wrap us up this hour on the program. That'll also start to wrap us up on the Daily Flames Roundtable, by the way. Thanks to Shan Virgie and Cam Hughes, our outstanding producers this hour. And the Daily Flames Roundtable is brought to you, as always, by Mercedes-Benz Country Hills. The fastest-growing segment of vehicles they sell is electric. Informed buyers are coming to see. Perhaps you should discover why minutes from the Calgary Airport.